everybody, and welcome to episode 48 of the Mental Dive podcast, where we talk anything and everything sports psychology and mental performance. I'm your host, Taylor Staden. All athletes are going to have to face this question at some point in their careers. And this question is, what comes next? Whether you retire at 20, 30, 40 years old, you name it, you're going to have to figure out what's next. And this question is easier for some athletes than others. Let's say an athlete goes through a really sudden career transition, you know, a career-ending injury at an early age. What comes next is likely going to be a more difficult question for that athlete, opposed to an athlete who is maybe later in their career and can foresee the fact that maybe they're going to have to retire or leave their sport. And the thing is now, is that, again, whether you retire at 20, 30, or 40, the average person is going to have roughly at least half of their life left. But many athletes get caught up in this idea that they are only an athlete. They have that very singular identity. So when they have to leave their sport, it can be very, very challenging for them. But there's actually ways that you, if you're an athlete listening, can help yourself with this career transition process. Or really, for that matter, anybody who is going through a career transition can use these ideas. One is that, you have to accept the fact that you're not going to be able to play your sport at a certain level for your entire life, right? So if you're a professional athlete, a junior athlete, you know, you name it, you're not always going to have that opportunity to play that sport at that level. So in saying that, you want to take the time over the span of you playing sports to explore different interests, explore different hobbies. Try to not get so caught up in that singular athletic identity, because that can be very detrimental for you. Because suddenly, if that sport of yours is stripped away from you, whether it's from a sudden injury or you retire maybe a little sooner than you would have expected due to unforeseen circumstances, that process can be very difficult for you because you've lost a major chunk of your identity. And then you're going to have to ask yourself, what next? Whereas if you were to foresee and explore different hobbies and interests prior to and over the span of your career, this process is likely going to be easier for you. It's likely going to be easier on your mental health and your well-being. And it's going to allow you to have another sense of meaning beyond your sport and to allow you to thrive despite something that you really care about, presumably, being taken away from you in a sense. And the reason why I bring this up is because this is actually what I was fortunate enough to have a conversation with today on the episode with Greg Camarillo. Greg is a former NFL wide receiver, and throughout the course of the podcast, we actually got into the reasons why he believes a lot of not just NFL players, but athletes have trouble with their career transition. And since his retirement, he actually has become an academic athletic advisor where he helps college athletes navigate this process. So during the interview, Greg was actually kind enough to share some of the strategies that he uses with college athletes to help them with these challenges. As well, he also shared how he's tried to find excitement post-career since retiring from the National Football League, as well as why he believes that the whole fight through it mentality doesn't work in real life. And as well, he shares some advice for both current athletes and retired athletes on what they can do to get help with this career transition process. Anyways, I'm not going to make you wait any longer. I have a habit of doing this sometimes where I keep the intros maybe a little lengthy, but you know what? Let's just get into it. Let's get into episode 48 of the Mental Dive podcast. Let's go.
This NFL alumnus played from 2006 to 2012 with the San Diego Chargers, New Orleans Saints, Minnesota Vikings, and Miami Dolphins, totaling 80 games, 146 receptions, and 1,730 yards. This wide receiver can now be found on NBC San Diego as an analyst. Thank you for joining the podcast today, Greg Camarillo. What's going on?
Taylor, thanks for having me, man. Not much. Just excited to chat with you.
Good. I appreciate that. So how's everything over in San Diego? I know up here in Canada, the thing's been pretty tight with the restrictions. I'm not too familiar what's going on out west.
Yeah, well, we are, I guess, a hotspot for the virus, or we were as the few months have passed. But the only good news is that you can do everything outside in San Diego. It was 70 degrees yesterday. I went on a bike ride with my kids. So there are restrictions on what we can do, but there's also a lot of good outdoor stuff to do as well.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I think that always gets lost in translation when it comes to lockdown. A lot of people think we have to stay inside, but if you have the accessibility and the means to go outside, enjoy the weather and get some exercise, I think it's a great excuse really to get out of the house. It's been my excuse anyways.
Yeah, a much needed excuse to get out of the house. I've got three little kids that have been schooling on Zoom and me doing all my work on Zoom. I need to escape the house too.
One way I always like to start off my podcast is I'd love to just ask you, what's your why? You know, what got you involved in football and what really drove you to want to put up with all the adversities along the way?
Yeah, I just enjoyed it. And I know that sounds simple, but as a kid, I loved watching it. I loved playing it with my brother in the yard. I loved playing it at recess at school. I just enjoyed football and not just the sport. I enjoyed being part of a team. I enjoyed the camaraderie that comes with that. So I always just pursued it because it was something I enjoyed doing. It wasn't like this is my means to a college scholarship or this is my means to a paycheck later on. It was just, I liked playing football. I had a passion for playing football. And I was willing to work hard to get new opportunities playing football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that's really highlighted as well by the way you got your start in the NFL, you know, a walk on to college, undrafted to the NFL. So I'm sure there was a lot of hard work along the way to really pursue your dream and to beat the odds that are already stacked against you.
Yeah, I each step of the way, I thought that was the end of it. My last high school game, I thought I would not suit up again, but I was willing to play whatever level, wherever I needed to go to keep playing football. Fortunately, I got a chance to walk on at Stanford. Same thing happened at the end of Stanford. I thought this was the end of my playing career. Tried playing arena football, but I hadn't graduated yet. So I made the decision to come back to school. And then I got really lucky to just get a tryout in the NFL through a connection of a teammate. A college teammate's dad was a coach and he gave me a shot. And so I was given a lot of great opportunities. But then I just had to try to work my hardest to take advantage of those opportunities.
Right. What would that shot look like? You know, it seems like such like a lucky connection to have where even going back to high school, you think you're done. You make it as a walk-on to college. You finish college, you think you're done. And then you end up finding this tryout. Would you mind telling that story?
Yeah, no, super lucky. So the coach for the San Diego Chargers receivers was James Lofton, a Hall of Fame wide receiver in the NFL, whose son was on my college football team, David Lofton. We're friends and teammates. So James would watch his son's games and the games I was also in. And he was a Stanford alum himself, always liked to give Stanford guys a shot. So it just happened to be that it aligned that he would watch my games because his son was there. He was looking for a Stanford guy to give a shot and I was available and they had a spot. And so in the NFL, I'm not sure how they do it now, but back then they had multiple mini camps and one was for rookies and quarterbacks and like, you know, roster bubble guys that needed more work. And so they bring more bodies to try out just because you need people to play football. You can't have a training camp with 20 people. You need 50 plus people. So they bring in, you know, 10, 15 tryout guys. And it's really just like, we need people to play football, but why not give you a shot? So for 3 days and five practices, I was in the NFL and I thought that was going to be the end of it. But there weren't very many people, so you get a lot of reps. It didn't start out all that great, but then by the end of five practices, I had shown that I was worth giving a shot in training camp. So I signed a contract to come to back to training camp and extend my opportunity to try to make the team.
Interesting. That's a really cool story. I mean, again, it just shows, highlights that perseverance you had to, you know, keep pushing for your dreams and really trying to make them come true, despite maybe, again, the odds are already stacked against you to make the NFL as it is, even if you're a first, second round draft pick, right? And to have a career. So, you know, it's, thank you for sharing that. That's really, really cool, man.
Yeah, I learned early on in college that if you're given an opportunity, you have to capitalize on it. And I was a walk-on receiver slash punter, which is a very odd combination. But my very first year as a walk-on, I was given a chance to play. Our punter wasn't doing well. Coach put me in with the starting punting group in practice. And I hadn't been practicing my punting. I wasn't preparing for that moment. He puts me in with a chance to play in practice, gives me two punts that I did terribly. And that was a lesson I learned from that moment forward is you always have to be ready for your opportunity. You don't know when it's going to come. It may never even come. But if an opportunity is to arise, you need to be ready for it. And so a lesson I learned early on in college showed up. I got an opportunity in the NFL, and I was more than ready for that moment.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that's something that's really evident as well when it comes to mental training, is the fact that a lot of the time our careers and our defining moments are really marked by moments of opportunity. So if we're waiting for that opportunity to arise, then we have to do, or really we should be trying to take every step possible to be ready for that opportunity. Yeah. So I think, you know, from a mental training perspective too, being very proactive in your development is really, really important. So then, you know, when the opportunity arises, you're more likely to be able to perform under pressure, and you're more likely to really take advantage of that.
Yeah. The more you prepare for a moment, the better it's going to go, the less anxiety you'll have about it, the better chance you can just step up and perform. And I'm not going to say that preparing eliminates stress. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But preparing will allow you to be your best in that moment. As opposed to just trying to wing it. If you're prepared, you're going to jump in there confident, ready to roll, and can capitalize on opportunities.
Yeah. You know, I think it's really, I love that you brought up the idea that preparing doesn't get rid of that stress, because as you know, as a pro athlete, stress is not inherently a bad thing. Having way too much stress is obviously poor for your health, but really when we get stressed and we get nervous and anxious, that's just our way of our body preparing us to perform. So yeah. Being able to be prepared and in that moment, be able to use those stress and those nerves to help you be your best is huge.
Yeah. I tell my kids, I've got three little girls, 8, 5, and 3. And I tell them, it's okay to be nervous. You're nervous because you care. If you didn't care, you wouldn't be nervous. So the nerves, having nerves is in no way a bad thing. You know, you have nerves because you care. It's just, can you still perform when you have those nerves, or are those nerves going to paralyze, you know, your behavior, your actions, your athletic ability? And that's where the preparation comes in. If you've done it before, if you've practiced, if you've prepared, you're going to be able to perform whether you're nervous or not. I'm assuming most people getting thrown into a tryout, most people getting thrown into a chance to be a punter as a freshman are nervous. I'd hope you'd be nervous, but as long as you're prepared, it's going to be okay.
So Greg, what really caught my eye about bringing you on as a guest today is that you posted a recent thread of tweets highlighting some of the struggles that NFL players go through post-career. If you don't mind me asking, what prompted you to want to open up and share your thoughts on this?
Yeah, the prompting was the tragedy of a former teammate and friend dying. Vincent Jackson was a Pro Bowl wide receiver for, I think, 12 years in the NFL. We were rookies together in 2005. You know, roommates in training camp, friends, and teammates for over 2 years. And so when he passed, I just felt like, let me share my thoughts. And these were not thoughts based on him passing away. It was just like, all right, here's the tragedy. Let me try to, you know, just voice how I feel about football players retiring. Didn't expect it to take off like it did, but, you know, it got a lot of great responses, and it started a lot of good conversations. And I think that is the key to starting this process of helping athletes transition is just to be, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it first. And then I think that can be the start to helping athletes on in the struggle. And I, it's beyond football players, athletes struggle in the transition away from sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm really sorry to hear about your friend passing. I'm not sure if I caught that news, but I'm sure it's obviously very tragic, and I hope you're doing okay during these times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. What are some of the reasons why you think athletes struggle post-career?
Yeah, well, there's a lot. I think the biggest part is a loss of identity. So for myself, when I finished playing football, I played football for 18 years, not consecutive, 17 consecutive years. It was the biggest chunk of my identity was being a football player. You know, everything I did was encapsulated by being a football player ever since high school. So 4 years high school, 5 years college, 8 years pro. And then I played once as a little guy, but didn't stick with it. Everything was about playing football, and it grows at each level. Everything I did in the NFL was, you know, how can I get better so I can make this team? How can I make this team better so we can win a championship? I'd wake up, I'd go to work out with knowing that this is my goal. I'd go to practice knowing that this is my goal. Even in the off season, it was, you know, what's next year going to look like? When do I start my training for football? The conversations I have with people are all, oh, Greg, you play football? Great. You know, let's talk about last season. Let's talk about next season. And you also, you're put on this pedestal as a professional athlete in, I won't even say the United States, in North America. So I can include my Canadian folk as well. You're put on a pedestal as a professional athlete, and it feels great. It's the hard work is rewarding. The money is rewarding. The feeling of being in a giant stadium, people cheering for you, making a big play, the catch, the feeling of competition every day. And then all of that is suddenly gone. So you're losing your goal. You're losing your passion. You're losing something that you put all your energy into. You're losing your structure. And that is losing your identity. So suddenly you go from being football player to not being football player, and there's a void. And it manifests itself in different ways. For me, one of the biggest struggles of losing that identity, two parts. One was, will I ever feel this level of excitement again? I just got done, you know, catching a ball to win a game in front of 80,000 people plus millions of people watching on TV, being on SportsCenter. Barack Obama said my name on TV, which to this day is probably the coolest highlight of my NFL career.
It's incredible.
And I'm laying in bed at 30 years old thinking, how will I ever feel this way again? Like, will life, I've got a lot of life left. Will I ever feel that excited, that driven again? That's tough to cope with, thinking that at 30 years old, some of, you know, the best moments of my life may be behind me. And then the second one was, I've always been very driven to work hard. I was an engineering student and a walk-on football player at the same time. Two things that require a lot of energy. And I loved putting my energy into accomplishing both of those. Trying to work every year to make an NFL roster. I loved putting my energy into that. And then that starts conversations when people ask, oh, what do you do? Well, I'm an engineering student. I'm a football player. They're fun things to talk about. And then suddenly that's done. And there's not as many cool things to talk about. Hey, Greg, what's next? Oh, shit. I don't know what's next. I'm trying to figure that out myself. Greg, what are you doing? I'm an academic counselor now. Greg, you know, what's your job? Oh, I'm an academic counselor. Oh, and then the conversation ends. Like, it's not like I love my job. It's not cool. It's not exciting. And it does. And so the lack of all those things that I mentioned, a goal, a structure, an identity, and then not having the same excitement in and around my career and feeling like those best moments of my life were behind me, that was tough to cope with at 30 years old.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different directions we could go, because you brought up a ton of really interesting and important points. One way I actually like to start is just, you know, I was looking through some of your older highlights, and obviously I came across the 2007 OT catch against the Ravens. And it's like you said, you're catching a game-winning ball in front of 80,000 people live plus millions. And, you know, you have Obama standing on TV. And I'm sure in that moment, there's nothing to you that feels quite like that, right? Or very few things. And now, as you said, you go post-career and now you're a athletic academic advisor.
Yeah.
Which to me, like I like sports psych, so I think that's a pretty cool job personally. But obviously I'm sure it's a lot more thrilling to catch that OT ball. What are some ways that maybe you've tried to find that excitement post-career? What are some other ways that you think athletes could maybe try to plan ahead so it's not so big of a shock to them when, you know, maybe they retire at 30 years old?
Yeah. I did an interview maybe a week or two ago, and the question posed to me was, how do you fill the void of missing football in your life? You know, football is a huge part of your life. You're done playing football, there's a huge void. How do you fill that? I don't believe you can fill that with one thing. I think you have to find components of your sport, components of your life that you enjoyed from your sport, and find them in different areas. So with football, I love the competition. I love being able to put all of my energy into something and seeing the rewards. I enjoyed the excitement of it, like we mentioned. So, I enjoy sports. I'm in and around sports, and I also love being at college. I'm raised by a family of educators. My dad was a college professor for 41 years. I like being on college campuses. So I took all these random parts of it, of what I loved about football, and try to reconstruct them from different pieces. So I love being in and around sports. I work in a college athletic department. I like being on colleges, so I work at a college. I like the excitement of football, particularly the performance, getting nervous for a performance. There we go. Not having it not go 100%, because anytime you perform, there's always something you can do better. Getting a chance to redo it and trying it again. I get that from broadcasting. So I get nervous before we do a show. I do my best. There's a few things that I'm like, oh, I want to fix that next time. Next week, I get to do it again. There's very few jobs where you get a chance to kind of have that performance, fix it, and then do it again. And then, you know, the last part is competition. And this is a hard thing to get in real life, because you don't have that daily competition. But I joined an old man soccer league right here in the neighborhood just to get a chance to run around and, you know, get some energy out, which I haven't done in over a year thanks to COVID. But hopefully, you know, hopefully it's in the future.
Right.
You know, but there's a few things I miss. And I was never a weight room guy. You know, from my build, you could tell I didn't love the weight room.
Same but here.
I love the feeling of knowing that you busted your ass that day. So you wake up, you go to a weight room, you go to a conditioning, you go to a practice, you know, when you gave everything you had. That doesn't come from real life. I try to give everything I can to my kids and my wife and parent and be a husband. But like at the end of the day, you can't say like, oh man, I gave my all to parenting today. That just doesn't work. Or for work, I can't say, man, I dominated those emails today. That was the best verbiage I've ever written in my life. Like it just, that doesn't work. And that's what I miss. I would love having something where I can go put my all into it and know that day, like, man, I can go to bed tonight, rest my head that I've busted my ass and I'm proud of that. So that part's missing, but I'm able to steal other parts from my career, from broadcasting, to try to put things together to replicate the feelings, the enjoyment, the contentment that I got from football.
You know, I love that. I really, really liked how you mentioned how you love the feeling at the end of the day, knowing that you really busted your ass and you got after it. And I think part of that too is if we're doing something that maybe we're not really intrinsically motivated to want to do, right? And we have to work really hard at it, we're more likely to get burned out. But if we can find other things in our life that we truly do enjoy and things that we want to improve at, then it's a lot easier for us to work hard. And so I think maybe this is part of your job as an academic athletic advisor. Do you ever help athletes with pre-retirement planning, like helping them find other hobbies and interests that they can do post-career?
Absolutely. And it's day one. So I work
With college athletes, from the minute they get to campus, well, even when they're recruited, all the way till they graduate. And with my first year students, I teach a class for them. And one of our activities is identity exploration. Who are you? Why are you that person? What do you believe in? And it's based in leadership. If you can articulate who you are, what you believe in, and why you believe it, then you're taking a step towards being a leader. But part of it is, let's figure out who you are. Because as a freshman college athlete, being an athlete is a big chunk of your identity. But if we can develop over the next 4 years, 5 years, experiences that give you other identities, you can rely on those post-graduation. So we do an exercise where they break in a pie chart, a circle graph right there, into their different identities. And I always find it fascinating to see how big the chunk is that says athlete. But I also give them another visual and picture a Jenga set. You've played Jenga before?
Love Jenga.
All right. So I bring out a Jenga set, and each one of these pieces is one of your identities. You know, for me, it could be a man, husband, father, brother, sister, athlete, educator. Your identity, and a big one, is being an athlete. So there's all these little Jenga pieces, and then there's a big chunk that's an athlete. What I tell to my students is, pump up that athlete one. There's nothing wrong with pouring your energy into being an athlete. Identifying as an athlete, that is totally fine with me. I will never take that off of you. But make sure those other Jenga pieces, those other identities, are placed below the athlete, meaning that when you're playing Jenga and you try to yank that athlete piece out, all the other identities that are supported by it don't fall with it. If you can be an athlete, say that's 50% of your identity, but there's 50% that doesn't rely on that. You know, I'm an engineer. I am a community activist. I am of a certain religion. That can be your identity and your passion. When you yank that athlete away, that foundation is still there. And so I think that's the important part, is developing through experiences, through community, other identities for student athletes that don't rely on being a student athlete. So when the athlete part is gone, the other identities are still there and you can start building on those.
That's a great exercise. You're welcome. I'm going to have to steal that from you one day when I'm working with some student athletes.
It's all you, man. Use it.
Appreciate it. So, I think it brings up a really interesting conversation too, where you kind of have these two ways of describing yourself, right? You could either say, hi, my name is Greg and I play football, or you could just say, I'm a football player.
Yeah.
Right. Very similar, but they have very important differences in the two ways you say it too.
Yeah.
Because as you know, and it happens all the time, and not just even football, pro sport, athletes can get a career ending injury and they're on a non-guaranteed contract, and suddenly their career is over. And next thing you know, they lose their meaning, right?
Yes.
Because that's one of the biggest things of sports, is that if you're too reliant on that athletic identity, then if it's suddenly stripped away from you, it's already going to be hard if you knew your retirement was looming. If you're 22 years old and you suddenly have a career-ending injury, it's devastating, to say the least.
Yes. It's easier to prepare for a transition when you know it's coming. And that's why in college it's better for me, because I know that most people, when they graduate, are not going to continue in the pros. It's more difficult if you have an injury partway through, but at least you're guaranteed to be a student closer to guaranteed, as opposed to the pros, where you are a professional athlete one day and it can literally end one day later and you are done playing sport. Football. When you leave your NFL locker room for the last time, you will not play organized football again. In most cases, you know, I have my pads, I've got my cleats. There's my helmets right behind me. I will never put those on and go play football again. And it's a unique thing to football. Soccer, you can go play a pickup soccer game. Basketball, you can go play a little bit of basketball. I'm not saying it's going to replicate your feelings of playing on a big stage, but you can get a little bit of it. Football, you will absolutely not play football again. And that little bit of finality, that ending, that harsh ending, makes that transition a little more difficult from my perspective.
Why do you think it's like that when it comes to football?
I mean, you need a lot of people to play a game. So you can't, You can't, I mean, you can go play pass at a park or play some 7-on-7 or something like that, but it's just not a sport you can just go play. Like, it requires massive amounts of organization, equipment, fields, money, referees. Like, it's just, it's not a pickup game.
Interesting. I never even thought of it that way. Cause I mean, I grew up playing ice hockey, right? Stereotypical Canadian kid with ice hockey. And, you know, there's recreational leagues that you can play in all the time. And you see a lot of athletes, they will do those, but I guess, like you said, that would make the transition a lot more difficult, because now it's not like you can go just go play around with your friends and as easily. Now it's like, once you're done, you're kind of done.
It's done. Totally done. And I don't know if I've run a route, an actual like receiver route, even just like at the park. In, I did it the year after I retired, and that was it. So 7 years, I've done very little that resembles playing football. And that's tough. And initially I distanced myself from the game, because I was, even though I felt like I had gotten everything out of my career, there was still a little glimmer of hope that maybe another team will call me. And so I distanced myself for multiple years. I didn't watch NFL football, because when I watched a team and a receiver did something poor, I thought that should be me. And that's a tough feeling to deal with while watching a game. Why is that not me? I still got it. I could do better than that. And so for 2 years, I didn't watch NFL football. I didn't want to be part of it. I didn't want to hear about it. That probably wasn't the healthiest, but that's what I needed to do to distance myself from the game.
Interesting. You know, looking back on your tweets, I think you mentioned something that I wanted to kind of pick your brain about how the whole fight through it mentality you believe works while you're playing in the NFL, but it doesn't work outside of football. Yeah. Would you mind expanding on that?
Yeah. So football, in my mind, is the ultimate team sport. And it's based on the sports that I played: soccer, basketball, baseball, you know, can't argue against rugby or cricket or something, because I don't know about them. But for me, in my experience, football is the ultimate team sport, because it requires so many people to come together for one goal pointing in one direction. There's 11 guys on the field at one time. There's 53 guys on an NFL roster. There's a lot of people that need to come together as a team to go win. And so if you take 53 guys and each 53 individuals brings their personal issues with them to a game, or their injuries with them to a game, you are going to have a massive amount of problems. No one will be able to focus on football. So there is a cultural mindset, the we over me, there's no I in team. You need to suck up what your problems are, what your injuries are, and bring everything you have just for the game. And it works fine for football. That is, if you've got a little bit of an injury, you know, deal with it, to take a pill, whatever you need to do, get out there on the field and give me your best. Even if that's a small emotional thing, say you had an argument with a family member, or an argument with a wife, you need to leave that at the door, come in there, give me everything you've got and go play. Again, works fine for trying to go win a football game. What that doesn't, it doesn't translate to real life. Especially transitioning. If you, as a football player, as this big masculine guy, oh, I don't have any problems, oh, I'll fight through it, I'll go to the weight room and I'll power through this, I'll be fine. That doesn't work with mental health issues. That doesn't work with substance abuse. That doesn't work with relationship issues. And so we've adopted, and I say we as the football culture, but at least I could speak for myself. You adopt this mentality of, I don't need help. I'll suck it up. I'll bury it down. I'll fight through it. Everything will be fine. And that doesn't work when it comes to real life issues. And I'm not saying, you know, don't be tough. Absolutely be tough. If you've got a small little injury, or if, you know, if you're just going through something small, you're going to be fine. Be tough. That's fine. But if you've got depression, if you've got a drinking problem, if you've got marital problems, sucking that up and powering through that does not work. And so I think as society, but also as football players, we just need to be okay with asking for help, knowing that this is not about the team. This is not about powering through. This is about, I need to be the best me. And we talked about that. I love the feeling of busting my ass every day, knowing I gave my all. That same approach needs to be with mental health. if I need help, let me be the best me and go get some help so I can really be at 100%. And I think there's a stigma amongst football players, amongst men, that it's not okay to ask for help, that we need to suck it up. And that does not work. We need to start asking for help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. So when you bring up the idea that a lot of men aren't very open or willing to want to ask for help when it comes to, you know, mental illness and whatnot. And then you also mentioned how football, in your opinion, is the ultimate team sport, where a lot of people don't want to bring their problems outside of football into the arena and into the facilities because it might affect the rest of the team. Do you think a combination of that is why so many players don't want to ask for help, because they don't want it to be seen as a distraction to the team?
Absolutely. And at different levels. So you don't want to be a distraction to the team is a big part of it. You want to be helping your team push towards that team goal of winning a championship. And anything that's taking away from that, you don't want to bring that to the team, which I get, and I don't think is really the heart of the problem. I think the heart of the problem is where you try to hide your injuries so you can be on the field. So in the NFL, you hide your injuries. A lot of people, including myself, you hide your injuries. You take painkillers so coaches don't know what's wrong with you, so you can practice so no one takes your job. And to this day, I'd go back and do the same thing. If a little something's wrong with me, I'm not going to tell them. I'm going to power through it. Because I don't want someone to take my job. I got injured once, and then as soon as I got healthy, I was traded. And so that's just how things work. But I think the mindset should be, if I have a muscle injury, I ice it, I get a massage, I do what I can do to be the best I can be. If I have a mental health problem, it's the same thing. There's somebody that can help you get that better. Just like we go to an athletic trainer for a physical injury, we should have a sports psychologist, a mental health trainer, so we can be 100% mentally. If everything's good mentally at home in life, you're going to perform better. So we should approach it with the same mindset as this is just, you know, like a muscle injury. You know, I'm going to take care of a muscle injury so I could play my best. I'm going to take care of my mental health injury so I can go play my best. And then, you know, bridging that disconnect of hiding it so you don't get cut, or hiding it so you don't lose your starting spot. I don't know how that shifts. If I had that answer, I would probably be an NFL employee or something like that. But I think we need to approach it in a mindset like, I have an injury. How can I fix it so I can be 100%?
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. Well, Greg, I'm conscious of your time. I know you have three young girls at home and a wife, and I'm sure you're a very busy guy. So thank you for joining me today. Before we sign off, what would some advice be that you would give to, one, football players still playing and those not playing anymore based off of what we've talked about today?
Yeah, for still playing, it is start thinking of a plan. And just like I mentioned with the Jenga pieces, you don't have to lose anything from your athlete identity, but start thinking of other things that you could explore. You know, go do a job shadow, do an internship, go visit someone, go, hey buddy, you know, buddy from college, here you're working in, you know, you are a nurse or you are a lawyer. Let me just walk next to you for a day and see what that looks like. Doing experiences like that can help find your next direction or can start help building an identity. And for retired players, I think the biggest thing is community. How can we all, I love being around football players. I relate to them. I talk to them. They're my friends. It's an easy conversation. How can we all come together? If you're disconnected from the community, let's find a way to bring you back into the community, because I feel better when I'm around football players, and I'm assuming other guys will as well. And then we can have honest conversations. And when guys connect like that, then we're doing good things. And I think that's the direction we need to head.
Great. Thank you, Greg. I appreciate that. Well, again, appreciate your time. It's been a lot of fun. I think it's been a pretty cool interview, and you've given me some takeaways and some practical strategies that I can use with the athletes I work with. So thank you for that, man.
Awesome. Thank you for having me, Taylor.
And that wraps it up for episode 48 of the Mental Dive podcast. Once again, big shout out goes out to Greg Camarillo for joining me for today's episode. I really, really do appreciate it. And then anybody, if you enjoyed my podcast and you believe that it's brought you value, please do reach out. reach out to me, Instagram, Twitter, at Taylor Staten. That's at TayLorStaden. I would also really appreciate it if you could leave me a review on the podcast, whether it's, you know, somewhere in the 1 to 5 star range or a written review or both. You name it, I would really, really appreciate it. But above all, I hope that you got to learn something today, because I know that I sure did. Greg had some great strategies that I plan on using whenever I may work with college athletes around career transition and athletic identity. So I'm very, very excited to do so. But again, thanks for tuning in, and I'm looking forward to sharing another episode with you all soon. Until then.